Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you, dear Kelly?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You had Invisalign.
It's horrible. Let me just get right to it. I feel like I'm back in seventh grade. I was like,
What are you saying?
And they're like, you're not going to talk any differently. And I mean, I'll probably have to get used to
liars.
It.
Liars. Total liars.
But I don't have it in now. So
no, I know. Yes.
But,
Thank you for that.
Yeah, exactly. Deborah's like, take those things out.
I was telling you that when I first got those, and it was a while back, and I've been terrible. I'm a terrible patient because bad compliance and all that stuff. I mean, it definitely worked and changed some of my teeth position.
Sure.
But I would find myself in the middle of the night. They'd be on the floor. I must have been like yanking them out.
That was so fun. I don't even know how you did that because I can barely get it out when I'm conscious. Seriously. You know what I mean? Like, I can't. It's like, ugh.
Must have been like in the middle of a nightmare or something. I had to pull them out and throw them out. So, anyway. so you'll be a good patient.
You know what? I can deal with the doctor, the dentist. I'm not the biggest fan, I have to be honest. Yeah, I'm really not. One time I literally had 13 cavities filled at the same time. 13. And that was not a happy camper. I think that scarred me for life. So, yeah.
So any good exciting stories?
Let me think. Aside from that. Oh my God. Wait, did I tell you?
Oh.
Did I tell you that no, Remy smashed his finger,
oh,
as you
yes.
know? Well, we went to it was healing. It was about the nail was half off.
Yeah.
It was healing. We go to Disneyland this weekend, met some friends there. He buys one of those fans with the mist, gets his finger stuck, and they're carrying 45 pounds to first aid. And me with directions, as you know, is the worst thing you've ever seen in your life.
Where was David?
So David was with London because it was like... You know, so
mayhem.
It was like, it was craziness. So I had to literally carry them and like, you know, through the people, didn't know where I was going. I'm in Adventureland, I'm in the other land. And then finally I'm like, please somebody. So they directed me, but he's okay.
Oh,
he's a trooper.
Poor little guy.
I know. What about you? Anything exciting on that front?
No, smashing fingers. I got x-rays for my back today. So hopefully we'll get some results on that to see what the hell's happening there. Ugh.
Poor thing.
Got depressed, by the way.
You did?
I did.
Because you couldn't
move. Not being able to move so much just made me just...
That's very common.
Bleh.
Yes. You don't feel productive, and then you feel like you probably are not adding enough value and things like that, I bet.
But I booked a lot of trips online.
There's the silver lining.
I was capable of doing that.
Good.
Anyway, so we had such a fabulous guest last week, Christine Wheeler, the tapping solution for teenage girls. And by the way, we have a fascinating guest today we're going to introduce in just a moment. So you may have some questions for him. Feel free to call in at 323-203-0815. Again,
323-203-0815.
I can't read now either. My eyes are going too. Anyway.
Mine too.
Yeah, so Christine Wheeler, she was awesome. Such a great tool. And I'm actually going to consult with her and start to incorporate that in my practice.
Well, and for those of you who missed last week's show, she talked about something called tapping. Not tap dancing, but it's basically a technique that, I guess, what did she say? It's sort of like... trains your brain into sort of processing the emotional. I don't know. It's kind of interesting, but I've done tapping, and I feel like it really works. So I'm glad she's tapping into the teenage world and kind of helping those girls who really need it.
Absolutely. So. Okay. Do you want to do the honors or shall
yes, I? Yes. I'm so excited. Okay.
But our guest does not get excited.
Exactly. All right. So this week we have Walter O'Brien, who is otherwise known as Scorpion. He is the founder of ScorpionComputerServices.com and ConciergeUp.com, a global think tank for hire that provides intelligence on demand as a concierge service for any funded need. Walter is the executive producer of the hit CBS TV drama Scorpion, with over 26 million television viewers, that is inspired by his life. He was diagnosed as a child prodigy with an IQ of 197 and has mitigated risk for 7 years on $1.9 trillion of investments and has invented and applied artificial intelligence engines to protect United States warfighters in Afghanistan. suddenly feeling so, you know, like I haven't done much
small,
in my life.
Right? So small.
Scorpion has created over 150 unique technology inventions, is an Irish national coding champion, and competed in the Olympics in informatics. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security certified Walter as being of national interest to the United States and granted him an extraordinary abilities visa, EB1-1. Walter recently was recognized by the Fort Wayne-based Community Council and the Northeast Indiana Defense Industry Association for saving millions of lives and was awarded a combat infantry badge and battle dress uniform from Operation Desert Storm. Welcome.
Wow. Welcome, Walter.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
We're beyond intrigued. Beyond.
All right, so before the show, we had a little chance to chat, and you were showing me the Myers-Briggs. So for a moment, can you explain what the Myers-Briggs is and what it assesses and your...
How you fall in it.
Yeah.
Well, Myers-Briggs is a psychological test exam that's been around, I think, since the 60s. It's used a lot on military side, and ironically, these days it's used for casting reality shows because it'll map out your personality and your left brain dominance and right brain dominance. For reality shows, they want to know that if two people are extreme opposites, they'll have them roommate together because they're guaranteed to fight.
Oh, that makes sense. So, sure. Yeah. Okay.
I did it as part of an executive training course, and you know, people are, if they're left brain dominant, it's more mathematical, more logical, more scientific. Right brain dominant people are usually more creative and artistic and poetic. And my results came back a little extreme. It was off the charts in every category on the left brain and zero on the right.
Absolutely zero.
Absolutely zero.
In each category.
What percent of people do you think has that?
Well, this group has been double PhD psychologists doing this all around the country for 30 years, and they've never seen it.
No.
You're one of a kind.
Well, my IQ would put me at 1 in 1.5 billion, so they probably just haven't met the other five.
Unbelievable. Okay, so I got to ask this. So growing up, did you feel totally like, you didn't belong? What was that like?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a village of about 300 people in rural Ireland. So, yeah, I definitely didn't fit in. I didn't drink and I didn't play sports. And that was the only,
right.
That was the only two things that mattered.
Yeah.
So, I definitely didn't fit in. And to some extent, the TV show now shows there is a home for everyone who never fit in.
True. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So can we talk about that? How did that get started?
Well, there's a long story about how the company got started, which we can work reverse into. But
sure.
The TV show got started because my company now solves problems for people all around the world. And we started having so many problems come in, we started running out of geniuses. We hire people with above 150 IQ who are 1 in 10,000 people. And we had 2,500 of them and 500 super nannies, which are people with high EQ, to manage them.
Which stands for emotional IQ.
Emotional intelligence, yeah. And we needed to attract more, so I went to, since I own a problem-solving company, I brought my problem to my own company and said, how do I find more geniuses?
Yes.
They said, if I write a book, the millennials probably won't read it. If I make a movie, they'll forget my name in 6 months. But if we replace CSI as the number one show on the air for the next 10 years, the geniuses will come find us, and the 12-year-olds will grow up wanting to be scientists instead of wanting to be Kim Kardashian.
Exactly.
So I thought that might be better for the country.
This is fantastic.
I thought that's really interesting because you say you don't really have a sense of what's right or wrong or good or bad except when it comes down to evolution. Can you explain that?
So I believe I can make a call on what's right or wrong or good and bad, but it's not based on feelings. It's based on a couple of different types of mathematics. One is I do believe in the greater good, in human evolution and things getting better, faster, cheaper, and more automated so more people can achieve their self-actualization and do what their vocation or their calling is instead of now where 99% of the people on the planet are scrambling to pay the rent on Friday and doing jobs that aren't really anything to do with their wishes and core competency. So freeing humans up from that would be a good thing. So because of that, if you look at almost any bad thing, corruption, nepotism, war, etc., almost all of them are bad for evolution.
Mm-hmm.
They slow down and disturb and distract us from the process of growing as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm against those things, not because they're bad and I feel bad. I'm against those things because it slows down evolution.
I have a question, because when you're talking, I think of Ayn Rand. Is that how you say your name? Ayn Rand.
Ayn Rand.
Yeah. Do you like her? Do you feel like you resonate with that message a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been accused of being John Galt.
That's so funny. Are you familiar?
No.
Okay. So she just really believed in like individualism and, you know, that kind of thing. And just super interesting. While he's talking, it just basically sounds
she
like what he's saying.
The book Atlas Shrugged.
Okay. But it does, it's interesting to me is because when you say those words, that sounds compassionate, but you're not really experiencing compassion.
She can't get over this.
I can't get over it.
She can't get over this.
Because we're such pinch you. Do you feel pain?
We're such feeling people. Yeah. That's why. It's like hard to.
Right. This is opposite day for you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he must think we're nut jobs because, like, look at us. We're so animative and, like, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's so funny. Look at him. He's so serious. It's like. Okay, but so back to this. Okay, so in relationships, so you're saying you could enjoy somebody's company, but you're saying you can't really sort of feel these warm and fuzzy, nice
falling
feelings.
In love.
Yeah, exactly.
And being in love.
Right. I think the unexplainable part, the part where someone's attracted to someone that they haven't talked to yet, mm-hmm. or they feel this person's their soulmate, or they're in love with someone they know is bad for them, but they stick with them anyway. That kind of inexplainable magic pixie dust Disneyland movie delusion mm-hmm. stuff. I am unaffected by that, not brainwashed by it.
But you say,
whereas if I meet someone who is completely compatible with me,
yeah.
and you know, on every level, it's effortless to be with them, and we can experience chemistry and adrenaline rushes mm-hmm. and stimulation mentally and physically together, then I'm ticking all my boxes, going, okay, this person is 99.9% compatible with me. That must be love.
So but that is sensation that's connected to emotion. In other words, you're saying you'll have a visceral reaction of adrenaline or some other experience.
Those are chemical reactions, though, not feelings.
Yeah, but, well, I wish we had a brain scientist here.
I know, right.
At the same time as well. Because the brain is intertwined, and unless those parts of your brain are completely, are they black? Like, do they not exist? Do you have a limbic system?
On all of the on all of the tests, they turn out. It turns out to be pretty zero.
Where's the limbic?
This is so amazing to me. This is. I want to take the Myers-Briggs now too, and figure out where I fall in this category.
You have zero IQ and total EQ. I'm just kidding.
No, but I definitely fall in the EQ. But this is just fascinating to me. Absolutely fascinating.
Well, you got to be careful if you take the whole range of tests, mm-hmm. and one of them is Looking Glass 360.
Okay.
Where they'll take two people who've worked above you, below you, and beside you for 2 years. They will answer questions on you. Then you're brought to a location where you run a fake company for a week. And double PhD scientists will watch you from behind one-way mirrors and observe you in antagonistic situations and how you handle them.
You've sold me.
Question your judgment. So then on Friday, they'll sit you down and put three envelopes in front of you. The first one is what you think of you. The second one is what your friends think of you. And the third one is what the experts think of you.
This is incredible. I want to do it in 1 second.
I'll do it with you.
Where all of them overlap, it's got to be you.
Yeah.
And where they differ is isolating your delusion level. So
wow.
If you think you're great at math and all your friends go, nope, guess what?
Right.
Guess what? You're not.
Yeah. This is incredible. I feel like you would love escape rooms. Have you done any?
Yeah, I've done six of them, yeah.
And you've mastered all of them, I'm assuming.
I got out of some of them in pretty record time.
Yeah. I bet. That's in.
That's the thing you did with David and your friends.
Love it. I absolutely love it. I think it's fantastic. So that's so cool.
It's fun. Yeah, my friends bring me as the ringer.
Exactly. You're the leader. Yeah. So wait, but sorry, one more question. How are you under stress? Like with other people maybe who aren't doing what you're doing, they're incompetent, you're in the room together.
Well, I try not to hire any incompetent
people
in what we do. Under stress, it's kind of two different levels of, I won't say people in the world, but training.
Uh-huh.
If you've ever worked with a pilot or a military person or whatever, the more stressful the situation, the calmer they become.
Uh-huh.
It's like if you ever sat in the passenger seat of a race car driver,
mm-hmm.
he will appear almost just above comatose.
Wow.
With micro-millimeter movements because he's totally focused and in the zone.
Wow.
Logically, me running around panicking like everybody else doesn't do any good.
Mm-hmm.
So the more stressed, the more calm and focused I become.
Very interesting.
Pushing off the stress and the panic for later, and then realizing by later I would have solved the problem, so there's no point in panicking.
Sure.
So myself and the people I work with become extremely calm, focused, and choose our words carefully under stress.
This is incredible. Very interesting.
You had a question you really wanted to ask.
No, I asked it.
No, the big O.
Oh, the big O. We were talking in the bathroom, and I was
thinking. Of course we were.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, we're women. And we were thinking that to have an orgasm, you have to, you know, feel something typically, either physically for your partner or something like that. So does that play into, you know, sort of not being empathetic or not feeling or any of those things?
No, I mean, that to me, that's more physical than chemical reaction.
Than anything.
So, yeah.
So you do feel that way.
Well, I guess to me, that's all behavior in that area is normal to me, but I don't know if it's triggered by feelings as much as, you know, physical stimulation, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Produces an effect.
Yeah. Someone punches you in the gut, I'm going to feel it.
Right. Right.
But how I react to it may be different.
So sensations, yes.
Exactly.
But not the
emotions.
Feeling, not the emotional
sensations
component.
Sensations are electrical.
Right. So you will experience cold if you have cold or hot or...
Ice cream headaches, yeah.
Okay. All right. So how have your partners, anybody you've dated in the past, I'm assuming you've not been married or have you?
No, I'm not married. I'm logical.
You're logical.
We'll get to that.
You know, we're going to lose our male audience if they start listening.
I know, exactly. Exactly. It's so funny. Or my husband. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so, okay, wait, go on. But what was the rest of your question?
I have no idea because my emotions got in the way. So yeah. Okay. So sensations, but not emotions.
Right.
But how have your partners who, do you ever end up with a partner who has some emotion or do you try to find people who are more similar to you?
No, I mean, I'd be down to a very small audience if I could only date people
would
like
think.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'd say all of my long-term partners are the unicorns of women. And the definition of that would be they're left brain dominant. That doesn't mean they're 100% left brain. It means in a push, they'll listen to their left brain before they listen to their right brain.
In making decisions or something.
Yeah,
like
they're
that.
Usually beautiful but not insecure. Mm. They're not catty around other women.
Mm-hmm.
They will cocoon if they have problems and issues. So they tend to turn inward and not talk to anyone and mm-hmm. become introverted. If they have issues to deal with, rather than blurting it to their 30 friends.
This is so interesting.
They'll have very few close girlfriends that are close to them versus someone who is a hot mess, for example, and have 30 girls at a birthday party because she's fun to empathize with, but not a threat to anyone.
Right.
She has very few friends because often if a woman is beautiful and has good judgment, uh-huh. other women don't feel comfortable constantly comparing themselves to them.
Oh, my God. This is so funny. Yeah.
They're sapiosexual. They're attracted to intelligence.
Uh-huh.
So they tend to find me, but they can't necessarily find each other. So I'll often introduce them to each other, and they'll become fast friends.
You introduce your exes to one another.
Not may not even be exes, just women I meet who are of a high caliber who meet that description.
Uh-huh. So it's a different kind of matchmaking.
Yes. Wow. I know. Right. I have so many questions.
So what... Okay. So I just... We started to have this conversation, but I think our listeners would find this fascinating. What is the difference between your description of yourself and a sociopath?
It's just like, I'm just going to throw it out there.
If we win orgasm, we can go sociopath,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Come on.
Well, I haven't read the clinical definition recently. But I think, according to my Myers-Briggs, it would meet all the same criteria. You know, lack of empathy, lack of compassion, etc. Probably the only difference is I believe in the greater good. And I'm also, Napoleon Hill's definition of happiness is living a purpose-filled life. Mm-hmm. I figured out my purpose and my self-actualization, and I'm fulfilling it. And my life is surrounded by people who are grateful for that.
Sure.
So I have no reason to trigger or interact with anything negative. I'm much mm-hmm. better off walking away. Happy people generally don't hurt other people.
Uh-huh.
So those would be the two main differences.
And I have a very random question. What's your astrological sign?
Pisces.
Pisces. Okay. Because Pisces are typically very creative and sensitive.
Is that March?
It's late February, March. Yeah, that's so interesting.
See, I'm the proof that that doesn't work.
I'm very like voodoo, you know, so, but I believe in that stuff. That's so interesting. Wow.
Yeah, but again, I just keep after going after this. You said happy people tend to walk away from bad things. So that's implying that there is the emotion of happy.
Well, that's the thing. Emotions lead to happiness, but happiness is not necessarily an emotion in itself.
You don't call happy an emotion.
No. Well, to me, a bunch of things that happen to you lead to happiness. If you have stability, if you have a good job, if you have good friendship, if you travel well, you enjoy your family, you like your kids, all that together, think of it like a mutual fund pie chart. All that added up together leads to happiness and contentment. That's why, while money doesn't buy happiness, lack of it buys misery. Because if you cannot be permanently happy if you're worried about being homeless on Friday.
So would you be miserable if you were homeless? Would you experience that state of being?
For me, yes, because I wouldn't be fulfilling a purpose in life. I wouldn't be productive. I wouldn't be hard to be proud of myself. So there'd be very little for me to be happy about.
Sounds more like it's an end goal rather than a state of being. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the state of being would be contentment.
Okay.
I think. And the end goal, the happiness, will vary over time. So think of it as a stock or a 52-week moving average. If you took the last 3 months of your life and you thought about your happiness from 1 to 10, and let's say you're at a 7.
Yeah.
So 7 is pretty content, and your goal is to stay at a 7 or higher for the rest of your life. If you do, then you win, whether you're married, separated, working, not working, whatever it is, whatever bucket makes up your total happiness score.
Really interesting way of looking at things. Yeah. So I want to backtrack a little bit, and I want to know how you got interested in computers.
So so as a kid, I grew up on a farm, and I was very logical, and everything on the farm was very organic. So I wasn't very useful on the farm, and I didn't like farming in the mud and the rain. So the first time I came across a computer, which was partially through school and the Gifted Children's Society, it just clicked. Something intuitively clicked. I was logical. It was logical.
Sure.
I could make this thing dance. I could think thousands of lines of code ahead in terms of what I put into it. So I finally had found something I was really good at that thought the way I thought. And it was, back then, there was very few computers, very few courses, very few books. So it really was a riddle. You had to reverse engineer it with trial and error to learn how it works. So it became a puzzle for me, and I was very good at puzzles.
I bet.
That's how it all started. And then, by 13, I'd hacked into NASA, stolen the shuttle blueprints. And by 16, I'd hacked the Bank of England, and it all grew from there.
That's incredible.
But hacked it for what purpose?
To get the shuttle blueprints printed out from my bedroom wall because I thought they looked cool.
And so did you get in trouble for that?
Yeah, I got busted by the NSA and Interpol, and then we did a deal and turned them into my client. The government's still my client today.
Oh my gosh. It reminds me of that movie with Tom Hanks. Catch Me If You Can.
Oh,
with Leonardo DiCaprio.
That was a fun movie. There's a second one out. You probably can find major flaws in the
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. You probably pick it apart. But yeah, but
it reminds me of that. It's a huge suspend disbelief movie, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's based on a true story.
But I'm sure that they altered many of the... What do you think?
Well, yeah, Hollywood does have to alter it all a little bit for the general public to be able to absorb it. I mean, all of the hacking movies, so she generally shows some person hacking in about a minute, flying down a tunnel of ones and zeros. Because real hacking consists of someone sitting at a keyboard with Jolt Cola and pizza late at night, sitting there going, well, that didn't work. Well, that didn't work. For 48 hours until they go, ooh, that's interesting.
Wow. Are you the type that if you start a puzzle, you have to complete it?
Yeah, I'm pretty OCD on that.
Yeah. I know someone like that. Interesting.
Is that you?
No, not me.
I am.
You are?
Oh, my gosh. If I start a puzzle, I put it on the dining room table. Every time I walk by, I have to do more of it.
Really?
Even if I have responsibilities, I'll sometimes go, oh, shit.
Yeah. And you have to complete it.
I just love it. I love puzzles. I find them to be very grounding.
Sure. I like them too.
Solvable. Well, so much of our work is not grounding. We don't have a lot of groundedness in our work. Sure. It's a lot of free-floating things that don't get solved for years.
Sure.
Sometimes for people.
Yeah, that must be hard for you. I didn't even think about that. Is it hard or is it different?
It's just different.
Yeah.
It's just different. When I was a kid, I used to find myself counting things all the time. So whenever I was bored at school, I would do math problems and try to solve things and trick myself and make something really hard, like take 15 numbers and like close my eyes and see how fast I could add them up. And it just kept me off the streets until I was a teenager. And then I went to the streets.
Right. But until then. Yeah.
Until then.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Concierge Up. And can you tell us a little bit, basically, what is it and why'd you start it and all that good stuff?
Well, so if we skip on a little from the story, for 20 years, I ran a company that solved any technical problems around the world. Credit card companies, insurance companies, banks, missile systems, any huge system that either killed people or you lose millions of dollars per hour if it's wrong or down.
Mm-hmm.
And then my customers started calling me with non-technical problems to solve.
Mm.
Things like, my mom has throat cancer. Research all non-FDA-approved solutions outside the U.S.
Wow.
My daughter has anorexia. Find all food that's odorless and tasteless, but high in calories and fat.
Oh, my God.
My parents, I need them to retire. Shut down their business, move them to Florida, get them a house and a Cadillac, and give me the new address. I wrote a book, figure out how to get it on the New York Times bestseller list by gaming the system. Can you choose a winning racehorse based on its DNA?
Wow.
I have a startup and my CTO just quit in a big fight. Can you hack back into my company, change the passwords to lock them out, hire and train a new one, and make the whole thing like it never happened?
Oh.
Fascinating requests. And we started approaching them just the same, with the same discipline we would engineering problems. We assume the customer's always wrong. We break down all the requirements and assumptions and everything else. And then as we put it all together...
Yeah.
They've never seen this kind of life, this military discipline applied to life instead of systems. So we could plan your wedding and your divorce and manage all the risks and budget and everything else. And so Concierge Up became a portal into the think tank that is Scorpion for the general public, so that they could go on there and say, you know, here's my funded wish or problem. And because they don't know what their problem costs, and neither do we, I give my time for free. And we request a minimum deposit of like $5,000, so kind of like a law firm.
Sure.
And then we start getting a super nanny on the phone with you and holding your hand and walking you through all these questions. Let's say you had a new invention and you have a day job, or you're a mom and you're a busy mom. You don't know how to turn it into a company. You don't know if you should turn it into a company, and you don't have the time.
Right.
So we would hold your hand and say, okay, well, let's do a little research and see if the price point's good. Let's find a manufacturer. Let's see if it's patentable.
Sure.
Let's fill in a business plan for you. Let's do a pro forma so we can figure out how much money you need. Let's figure out the right conference to go to raise that money, and hold your hand through the whole process. And at any point, you can cancel or stop and actually get your money back for all the hours you haven't used, because it's just a deposit.
I see.
So that way, there's zero reason not to try us out for a few hours.
Sure.
And even for the $5,000, and get your $4,700 back if you don't want it or if you don't like it. So people started using us that way, and it became like a super butler service, where now people just call us every 3 days and go, I want a massage chair in my upstairs bedroom. I want a shark tank in my garage. I want to choose a fun sports car for the weekend. Go figure out which one
this is a human Google. Is basically what it is.
Well, the phrase we use is, if you want to search something, type it in Google. If you want it to happen, type it in Concierge Up.
Wow, I love that.
Me too.
And, it's amazing fun for us, because we get now up to 2,000 requests every 10 days.
Wow.
And our customers stick with us. And like I said, every 3 days they'll call us with some new idea or thing they just don't have time to do themselves.
Sure.
And they want us to look into it.
What's the most interesting request you've heard?
Well, we did have a billionaire call us who said his son fell in love with a Ukrainian gold digger and he wanted us to break them up before the wedding, but don't let him know we interfered.
How'd you manage?
Did you do it? Was it successful?
Yes, we did it.
I'm dying.
And the guy never found out?
No.
Well, he might now. Exactly. Maybe he's listening.
No, we changed the details. Of
exactly, names. Right.
Yeah, good.
Ethnicity, all that, yeah.
So again, though.
Yeah, he's rebonding with the father, and they annulled the marriage.
Oh, my God.
Do you know that
God.
I was on my big, fat obnoxious fiance.
Yes.
So this was a Fox television reality show. I had no idea that I was being set up for a con. I don't watch reality TV. So I thought I was being hired to be the couple's therapist for this unlikely bonded couple, right?
Okay.
And they had something like what they told me is they had a couple of weeks that they had to convince their respective families that they were a true couple that were getting married.
Uh-huh.
When this thing came out, which it was supposedly called Whirlwind when I signed the contract.
Uh-huh.
And see, my big, fat, obnoxious fiance, no, it can't be that. Watch the show, it's that. And they were conning everybody who was on the show, and if they could successfully con everybody on the show that they weren't a real couple, their families would each get $250,000. But the families got mad. They got really mad at being conned. So they were conning everybody. It was just hysterical.
Wow.
So that story reminds me a little bit of that, but a completely twisted
version.
Yeah.
So interesting.
So when you say that you have fun doing these things, again, you don't consider fun to have any emotional component to it.
Right. It means it's mentally stimulating. It's fulfilling from the point of view of you're accomplishing things. You're making tangible differences in people's lives. And so it's all very tangible. There's no part of it where I can't explain where the feeling's coming from, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound so different from somebody who practices altruism, somebody who cares about people and the greater good and is more selfless in their action.
There is a difference.
That's what you're saying, but I'm saying I would imagine a lot of people miss that because they're not looking for the emotion. They hear the words of, I want to do this for the greater good of the people. That sounds altruistic to me.
Well, so let me give you some examples of where they'd say that, but it's not true.
Okay.
So let's say I had a smart lady who wanted to be an elementary school teacher. So I explained to her that why did she want to do that? She thought education of the kids was important. And that was her altruism. And I said, okay, so do you want to be selfish about it or effective? Because if you're selfish about it, then go take your summers off and go be a teacher. If you want to be effective about it, go work for a company like a big pharma, use your IQ to get on a couple of patents, exit with $3 to $7 million, open up your own school, and educate 600 kids a year instead of 30.
So cool.
Now, she went that route.
She did.
Yeah. I had another gentleman who was a friend of mine who had a family and kids, and I kept inviting him to a special networking event for kind of high-end business people. And he kept missing it. His kid had ballet practice, then his son had a football match, then it was his son's birthday, etc. So he missed it 3 or 4 times in a row. So I called him up and said, I can't invite you anymore because this is a small group and we need someone to turn up reliably. And he said, why? And I said, because you don't care about your family enough. And he never understood why until what I knew would happen 6 months later. This was 2007, 2008. The banks collapsed. He lost his job. He had no network, no contacts, no other business people.
Oh.
The house foreclosed on, and the family were in a hostel. And I'd say them having a house was more important than soccer practice.
Right.
But he wasn't doing the big picture. He wasn't strategically taking care of a single point of failure for the income for his family. So I am ruthless about the pursuit of the greater good.
Right.
Regardless of the feelings. Of the
sure.
Team.
Yeah.
Have you ever shed a tear?
Perhaps when I was a kid, I got hit by a car accident and I almost broke my back when I was thrown off a horse. So I think out of
from pain,
pure physical pain, but beyond that,
but never from emotional pain.
And never from a relationship,
like somebody breaking up with you. You probably already calculate when the breakup's going to occur because you can already define
exactly.
Well, I have gotten in trouble for predicting it, writing it down, putting it in an envelope. In the entire conversation and handing it to them and saying the reason we're breaking up is they're predictable.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So
did you get slapped in the face for that one?
Yes, but when they turned it around, they saw Will stand up, spill a drink, slap in the face, and yell. It was on the back of the prediction.
The sheet. This is
but it worked. We broke up.
Right, exactly right.
Well,
gosh, this is amazing. So I want to know who your mentors are.
They're not us, that's for sure.
I've had a couple of mentors in life. Unfortunately, the sad part is I tend to surpass my mentors after about 6 months.
One would think.
Where I've gotten a little beyond what they can teach me. And that's cool for about a minute, and then you're back to being lonely again. Because if you have a problem, you got nowhere to take it. obviously, I look up to people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and mm-hmm. others that have changed the world completely and done more good than Mother Teresa. But there are other mentors that are less well known. Frank Rose wrote a book called Into the Heart of the Mind mm-hmm. that I read when I was like 9 or 10 about artificial intelligence. And it taught me about meta knowledge and about the what happens when the brain looks at itself. And what happens when the brain sees the part of itself that it's using to look at itself.
So cool.
And that changed my thinking about human beings and how we can separate our consciousness from our bodies and so on. So that, people like that completely changed my life. Jonathan uh-huh. Waldron was one of the early researchers in the early 90s for virtual reality. Now you're hearing more about it now, but virtual sure. reality was huge in the beginning of the 90s. The problem was technology and resolution and cameras and mm-hmm. computers and bandwidth were all too small, mm-hmm. too slow to handle it. So this time, VR is the second time around for me, mm-hmm. but he was the father of commercializing it.
Okay. So do you feel like you consciously at all manipulate your body or your brain to not have feelings? I keep going there.
I know. She can't get over this. She just cannot get over this.
No, I can't. No, I mean, do you? Because in that last statement, it sounded like at some point you were more consciously like being more logical. Or is this just inherent in who you are?
I think it's inherent in who I am. I think if I would consciously have to work on pretending to have feelings and emotional quotient uh-huh. is an effort for me.
Mm-hmm. But that's what you said. So you know how to sort of practice what I call technical empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like being an actor. There's a group that I get together once a month. I've been doing it now for 5 years called Extelligence. It's an extension of Einstein's Mastermind program. And it learns to think with other people's brains instead of your own.
Wow.
So it's 15 uh-huh. of top people in the industry who come together privately. And there's 3 rules. Everything at the table is confidential. One person talks at a time. And you're kicked out if you're caught being politically correct. So you're not allowed to use a filter.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
So if you remember the movie Fight Club?
Yes.
This is verbal Fight Club.
This is so
cool.
So
then you can throw in a topic like Trump or Obamacare sure. and just let them go at each other.
Wow. That would be fascinating. I'd like to be a fly on the wall.
So do you consider yourself political?
I'd consider myself probably an anarchist more than anything
right,
else.
Right, sure.
I consider most politics pretty irrelevant to what the corporations want to do.
Yeah. It's absolutely fascinating. I feel like I could pick your brain for hours. You're like one of those, you know, that I could just have a field day with.
I was curious if anybody has ever mentioned or thought of you as Asperger's.
I was wondering the same thing on the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I started off, that's why they sent me for testing. Mm-hmm. I was younger. I was distracted and asking too many questions and, mm-hmm. and never satisfied with results and embarrassed half my teachers who were only a page ahead in what they were supposed to be mm-hmm. experts on and so on. So, yeah, probably before the people were using that name, they just called me weird.
Right, sure.
But, no, absolutely, if I don't enable EQ at all, you could blame me for being anywhere on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was just curious because that seems...
I was wondering the same thing. Although some people say if you're on the spectrum, you actually feel more, even though it doesn't seem that way. You actually feel deeper.
That would be a big difference.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you've also mentioned loneliness at times. So how does that show up for you as an experience? Because when I feel lonely, I usually have emotions of sadness and fear attached mm-hmm. to it. What is your experience of lonely like?
Mine, again, is purely mechanical and functional. It's a case of I can't hire more people like me. It's hard to scale me. And if I have a problem, I've got nobody to brainstorm with.
But there is then, on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which you talked about, a sense of belonging. The need to belong is part right. of the hierarchy. So you do have that.
Well, I created my company of only smart people mm-hmm. to create an oasis, if you like, mm-hmm. That I could survive in and I could enjoy. There's a huge contrast between the people I work with in my work and then the outside world that I step into mm-hmm. in sure. terms of either level of flakiness or dependency or panicking
sure.
when things mm-hmm. go wrong or just awareness of where sure. the world is headed in the next 5 years, how technology is going to play out and what it'll do to the U.S., uh-huh. how all of us will be affected as soon as Uber has self-driving cars.
Right. Yeah, I'm nervous about that, too.
What do you think about self-driving cars, actually? That's an interesting question. I'm terrified of them.
Well, they've done 2 million miles without an accident, so they're safer than most humans.
Jeez.
They're legal in 2 states, Nevada and New York. There's zero adoption curve. So Uber employs about 144,000 drivers. If they change tonight, all of those to self-driving Priuses with Netflix in the back, you wouldn't notice. When you call your Uber, it'll turn up. It has your credit card. It has your address. You're hoping the driver won't talk to you anyway. So nothing changes from your point of view.
Right.
But what does change is our entire economy is very automotive-based. We only use our cars 3% at a time. Uber eliminates that other 97%. Mm-hmm. So now what happens to gas stations, since they're electric?
Right.
Car washes, since they're maintained downtown centrally? Mm-hmm. Car tire centers, brake centers, Pep Boys, O'Reilly's.
Right.
You don't have valets. They're out of a job. You don't valet an Uber. And if you flew over this city and looked down on it, you'd realize half the real estate commercially is zoned for parking.
Right.
You don't park an Uber. So what happens to a precious commodity when it becomes suddenly twice as available? It goes to half the price. Mm. Just as we go into a recession.
Right.
And nobody knew Uber 5 years ago, so this will all happen in the next 3 years. By then, they'll pass a law and say humans are not allowed to drive on freeways anymore because they disturb the Ubers. The only reason we drive at 65 miles an hour is the human can't handle more safely. An Uber can.
So you're saying we should invest in Uber, is what you're saying.
Might be too late.
That's amazing.
Wow. Okay, so what haven't we asked you that we should ask you?
I have so many questions, please. I have a million. So,
but I want him to, there's something he really wants to put out there to the world, with our quarter of a million listeners at this point.
Well, I think that what people should recognize is there's a place for right brain thinking. If you're a musician, if you're an artist, if you're an actor, you should listen to your right brain during those times. That's why I would be terrible at those things. Mm-hmm. And then there's times to listen to your left brain. Mm-hmm. Maybe when you're taking out a mortgage writing your will and or any contract. So for those out there that are maybe more right brain dominant and they know that they have a deficiency in the left brain, now they know they can rent it. So on the projects they're doing and the things they need advice on, when they're going through life and they have these big dreams, and they have the money for the big dreams, but they don't have the third leg on the stool, which is the ability to execute.
Uh-huh.
The discipline, ability, and planning to execute correctly. We are the third leg on that stool. And we can allow people to reach their full potential by simply reaching out to us and putting in just a one-liner in the ConciergeUp.com and say, I need help with this.
This is incredible.
And someone will get on the phone and hold your hand and walk you through it. And, you know, we have no problem reaching for other things in society. If we need a doctor for our health or if we're moving house and we don't have a truck, we'll go to U-Haul and get a truck. So we rent capacity we don't have in other areas. But what I really challenge people to think about is, what if you could rent brain capacity? You know, what if you can have that smart kid at school do your homework for you for your whole life?
Sure. That's so neat. So I have two last questions. I know I have so many. Okay, so what's your criteria for hiring? I'm sure you have something.
150 IQ or higher for the consortium, the engineering part of it, and 75 or higher on EQ.
Okay.
With preferably a PMP certification, project management professional, for the super nannies.
Incredible.
And that's not everything, but that's a good start.
Right.
It's kind of like hiring a basketball team. If you only interview people above 7 feet tall, it doesn't mean they can all play basketball, but it's a good start.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah.
You said you had two.
And then the second question is, would you ever be friends with someone like me, or could you think this would never work?
I have friends who are very high EQ and very right-brained oriented, but they have to have the stomach for dealing with, I guess, the black and white aspect of being constantly dosed at reality.
Sure.
Well, I've had people who are happy to live in a delusional bubble that I tend to pop as soon as they talk to me. I go, well, that won't work and you'll be unemployed in 3 years.
I see what you're saying.
And the fact that I'm right doesn't seem to matter.
Yes.
I'm still not their friend.
That makes sense.
That does make
sense. So if you can appreciate that I'll always be married to reality,
yes,
and you can handle that, then yes.
And your purpose is for the greater good. I think more people can buy into that than if they think that what you're trying to do is scam them, take their things from them, make them successful. Or you know, also, a lot of people who are very bright, they have a lot of emotion and negative and destructive emotions. So you can see that in the realms of envy or jealousy and things like that, which cause people to sometimes interrupt people's positive path, and you don't have any of that. So you would be somebody that would be very trustworthy in that capacity.
Right. I'd probably be the most dependable person you'd know. So as a friend of mine put it, if your mother died, go to someone else to cry on their shoulder. Come to me to plan the funeral.
Exactly.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. And then also, how did you end up in LA? That's what I want to know.
Well, LA is full of the best and the worst people in the world. You just need to find some of the best ones and treat the rest like visiting the zoo.
Now, yes.
LA has a lot of people here who believe everything they saw in Hollywood is real. So they grew up with an unbounded imagination for new ideas.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people here who have come into money relatively easily. They got lucky with a movie or something, made $10 to $100 million. Every now and then, those people will bump into each other. So the person with the idea meets the person with the funding. Neither of them have the ability to execute or the education behind it to do all the homework it needs for that one in a million shot, for that to become a company that can go IPO or be bought out. So I am here because I don't fit in, because I don't have competition. And people are sent to me like they're sent to the principal's office, where friends of theirs will say, you two better go talk to Walter before you blow all the money and end up suing each other. So I'm adult supervision for startups.
Incredible.
Yeah, I love it.
I love it. Beyond. So cool.
Well, I feel good about you anyway, even though I have a feeling. You mentioned one more thing about, because you mentioned pride. So you feel proud, you said, something like that, when people get what they wanted.
I feel productive.
Okay.
And yes, part of that is I would feel proud of having accomplished a lot.
Okay.
So if I can save lives or make someone's dream come true, or let's say I did take their idea and we made a big company together and they exited for $50 million and they turned that around and put that into charity organizations and schools and philanthropy, then I'm the guy behind the curtain who caused that. So I can be proud of myself having achieved the greater good.
Yeah, nice. But you don't really give a shit about what other people think about you.
No. I assume most people are wrong most of the time.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
You care about what people think of you.
Yeah, but I've gotten better.
I care too much.
I've gotten better over the years, though, which is good. But I'm amazed when people don't care at all.
I'm amazed.
Yes. So it must be so freeing.
I always tell people that in therapy, that I say the number one thing is you'll know you're better when you care less about what other people think about you.
Yeah.
Because, God, so many people make terrible decisions all based on wanting to be liked.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you have to consider the source of who's saying it. If a blind man says you're ugly, how much is it going to bother you?
Exactly. Right.
So, I mean, I'm not going to take weight loss advice from someone bigger than me, and I'm not going to take financial advice from someone with less than me.
Yes.
So I consider the source.
Yes.
Makes sense.
I think about that with relationships, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So where can people find you?
Well, conciergeup.com will allow you to submit your funded wish. And scorpioncomputerservices.com will allow you to see the powerhouse behind it and how we solve those problems and customers we've worked with. And obviously the TV show then on CBS, which will start season 3 probably in September. We're starting to get prep for it now. You know, that's a great thing to watch with your 12-year-old and sit at home and discuss EQ when the show's over.
Fascinating.
Very cool.
Well, thank you so much.
You've been amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much for being a great guest on our show.
Really interesting. So next week,
Misty B is coming back on. She's going to co-host with me because dear Kelly is going to be abandoning me again. Where are you going?
I'm going on a fossil farm to a wedding. So random. In Wyoming, in the middle of nowhere. So you'll be in a better spot.
Do you get to find fossils?
Yes, we're going to do a dig.
Oh, how fun.
It's going to be kind
of cool.
Your
kids are going to just go out of their mind with fun.
They're
going to
love it.
That is awesome. Yeah, so Misty B. And I invited Marlon back on. Marlon Young is going to come back on the show, and he's the Last Dinosaur, the audio book, and we're going to talk about the difference between men and women and how they feel in relationships.
So that's very interesting.
Yeah. So you have a great trip.
Thank you so
much. I'll miss you terribly.
You too.
Okay.
All right, thanks
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.